My most unique ability, to be honest, is probably that I can look at a situation and assess it and come up with a plan to make it work.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
Okay, my man.
How's it going, Rob?
Very well, Dan. How are you?
Doing amazing.
Good.
Where do you get a hat like that?
This one came from Cowtown in Regina.
Nice.
Yeah.
Special edition or anything? Story behind it?
No. You know what the story is?
Yeah, tell me.
So when I managed Farm Progress Show in Regina, it was the second year.
How many years did you manage
Farm Progress? I managed for 10 years.
Okay, cool.
I was there for 14.
Yeah.
But the second year I was actually the manager. We had a phenomenal show. It was the beginning of lots of improvements. And we had a pretty good night Thursday night. And of course the show ends on Friday, and Friday morning we'd have an end of show scrum with the media. I woke up about 45 minutes before I was supposed to be there.
Why is that, Rob?
Well, let's say we had a very good Thursday night. That's great. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I threw the cowboy hat on.
Yeah.
Went to the sink, didn't even shave. I was all scruffy looking, but I had the cowboy hat on.
People loved it.
And boom.
Trademark.
It just stuck.
I kind of wondered that about you, because you got the man in black thing going on. I mean, you're not dressed for it today, but you have a look and you wear it all the time. It's like, God, that must be hot. But you learn the power of a brand, I guess, eh?
Well, the reason I stuck with it is, okay, so I'm 6'2" tall. You throw the hat on me, I'm 6'5". In a crowd, at an ag show, nobody wears a cowboy hat except me. So if a customer says, I need to see Rob, the staff can say, look for Rob, this is what he looks like.
Absolutely.
And then it's easy to spot me.
I love that.
So it was really about letting people identify me when they need to find me during a show where there's 10,000 people walking around.
Speaking of which, we were talking, we had an Ag and Motion post-mortem. And we were really happy with everything with the show, by the way. Thank you, Rob.
Oh, thank you.
I was about to throw you under the bus here. You're like, oh my God, sweating bullets. No, it all turned out really good. But we were talking about having one of those inflatable things that kind of goes with the Eberhardt egg. Because I don't know if we had enough flags. And I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's with 500 exhibitors now, it's just a massive sea of iron and people and stuff. And to, you know, make sure people can find you and whatnot. But is there a digital option one day that's going to be coming to allow you to get physically to a booth, like a GPS tracking thing?
Or geofencing? So actually what we have now is on the Ag in Motion app, you can actually download it. You can say, I want to go to such and such booth, and it will identify where that cell phone is that you're using, and it will draw you a map, and you just have to follow
this year.
That. Yep.
Oh,
for the, actually, for
missed
the past
that.
2 years.
Well, I'm glad we had
so
this
you can just you can just download
this technology
it and go.
Forever. Are you a farmer who is a showmaster? Are you a showmaster who likes to farm, or what the hell's going on over there?
So my passion, my love, is the cattle business.
Okay.
So I'm third generation. My daughters are the fourth generation of being purebred Hereford breeders, and I still maintain 100 cows. We have a bull sale in the spring. We have a female sale in the fall, which we partner with some of our other friends with to produce those events.
Yeah.
And that background is what actually got me the job in Regina as the show manager for that show. And what it was is because I had volunteered at livestock events. I had managed livestock events.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the gate that opened up my opportunity to be in the ag show business.
And when was that?
That would have been in 2001.
Okay, so you just got into the show business because you're part of the show through the livestock industry.
Yep.
2001.
Yep. So I was the show manager, the chairman of the beef committee for a fair. And I think that little bit of experience is what opened it up for me to become the demonstrations coordinator for Western Canada Farm Progress Show.
And that's ironic because now you're full circle in the fifth year of Ag in Motion busting at the seams. You brought livestock back into it.
That's right, yeah.
This is the first year, right? Livestock were back?
No, they came in. We tried to introduce it right off out of the gate.
Oh, okay.
This is the year the livestock program at Ag in Motion really exploded.
I saw that.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing that struck me, and I know the times are changing, but one thing that struck me is the rodeo guy or the announcer was moving the cattle around in the chutes, and he's explaining some cattle psychology.
You get out of anybody's comfort zone, changes them, right? How do they react? Whether you're a person or an animal, same thing.
I love steak. I'm a big steak guy. I eat steak pretty much every day.
Good for you.
It's technically the like perfect food, and I believe, you know, and in fact, I've been getting into reading a lot of stuff about, you know, food, like meats versus plants and stuff. I think it's a very interesting rabbit hole, but beef is a big deal, a really big deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's happened right now in social media and even in mainstream media is the discussion around plant-based meat and real meat is interesting, because what it really is doing is, for the plant-based meat, it's a further process, right? So you're taking peas or lentils or pulse crops, whatever it is, and you're producing something different. So it's a processing, right? You're selling another processed
food. This is it.
And when you look at the list of ingredients in it, it's very different than what we talked about 10, 15 years ago, where we want single, simple ingredients, whole foods. All of a sudden, we're introducing a new practice to make people feel good about being a vegan. But the funny thing about it all is we're producing something that, how do they know they want it? If you've never eaten meat, or you tell yourself you don't want meat, why are you now producing something that is imitating meat?
Right.
So I think that's interesting too. But what it's doing though is it is bringing another light back to beef or other meats, right?
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about, I think, over the next 6 months, the real value of what meat brings to a person's diet.
Yeah, and I don't think it's all bad. I mean, I think it can be a good source of protein and personal choice and all that. But let's face it, where's the Beyond Burger going to be? Is it going to be around the outside aisles where we all know we should be eating with the fruits and vegetables and all the meats? Or is it going to be in the center of the store? When you go in there, you know, you ain't coming out with all the healthy stuff. I mean, there's frozen vegetables.
Yeah.
But they're going to be in a box. It's going to have a lot of triple syllabic shit that went in there on the side. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'd be interesting. Like, people purchase based on price, convenience, and taste.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're buying stuff. Yeah, we talk about nutrition and looking at the labels. But if that was truly the case, would the USA have this obese issue that it has now?
They have a big,
huge issue.
That's massive.
It's because they prefer taste and convenience. And that's the way we produce.
I just wonder, you know, people are starting to think about food in a different way, and I think it becomes a little bit more of a fundamental philosophy. I mean, I think a lot of people are choosing vegan for other reasons besides price and convenience, no? It's not that cheap.
It's not cheap.
Is it like a Beyond Burger? It's not cheaper than
it's a
real
dollar,
ass burger from here.
It's a dollar a patty more, right? So are you basically going to double the price of your protein intake? I don't know. We'll see. We're just at the beginning of the stage. I'm not, actually. I heard a really good speech about 2 months ago where the guy, he got up there and he says, so this is my stance on these Beyond Meat products. Honestly, right now, lots of them don't taste that good. And people, after they try them...
They're not there yet.
So this is generation one of a product that will adapt and change to the market, or the market won't accept it. And either way, agriculture, whether you're producing beef or whether you're producing lentils or pulse crops, there'll be a place to sell that product.
Yeah. You know? I think it's good for some of the stuff that's, you know, in Saskatchewan that we're growing. It's going into some of the stuff, I think.
I'm not worried at all. I think it'll find a place where it should, and that'll be fine. Like, there are parts of this country, parts of this globe, where you can't produce crops that will produce Beyond Meat, right?
Right.
But there's parts of this world where a cow or a goat or a sheep is the only way you can get protein off that land for a global population that continues to grow. People need protein.
Yeah.
Whatever form it is.
Absolutely. And you got to wonder where a little bit of this influence or sources are coming from. Like, I seen a thread the other day, real or not, whether, you know, some of the information coming out of how bad meat is for the environment. There's a big, big movement on that. Is it coming from people invested in Beyond Meat? Apparently, some of the threads lead there.
Absolutely.
So, right? And we all have vested interests, but I mean, yeah. It's important for the public to maybe know that, understand where some of the data is coming from. Yeah. We get that on the agriculture side for things like Monsanto.
Yeah.
Can I come and get some meat, like a snout tail?
You can always order something from me. Yep.
There's a lot of micronutrients in the liver. How does that work? You sell cuts like you?
Yeah, we do. I mean, most of our animals are used in the breeding stock,
mm-hmm.
but there's always something that is used in the food industry too.
One of the interesting things, I don't know exactly where I heard it or read it, and for a while there are two boys working there. I just got one boy working there now. But they said that the turn that Maple Leaf took from a branding perspective wasn't just about to the consumer, it was to their employees. Yeah. Because people now, especially millennials, they want to feel like they're working somewhere good, not like, oh, we're just butchering animals that are full of whatever.
It's really interesting, right? Like, they had that whole listeria case. People died. Like, mm-hmm. You could not have a worst-case scenario mm-hmm. in any food production. I don't care if it's meat or if it's vegetables. Like, people died when they ate that romaine lettuce 2 years ago, you got to remember, too, right? Like, in food production, when someone eats something that makes them sick and die, that's the worst-case scenario. But you look at what Maple Leaf did to take that awful experience and turn around, and now their market share is bigger than ever.
Challenge breeds opportunity, my friend.
Yeah, they did the smart thing. The president got on TV the next day and basically said it was our fault.
I didn't really follow that. That's what they did, eh?
Yeah, he got on there the next day and said it was our fault. We take full responsibility, and this is what we're doing to clean it up right now. We're going to be better than we ever were. And their market share now is higher than it was before the incident happened.
I'm telling you, from perspective of somebody who's been in the community since 2002 in Brandon, Maple Leaf's a big part, integral part of our community.
It is.
And honestly, people can say whatever they want about immigration. From my perspective, we have an amazing diversity in our community. I can't believe those people come over, work their friggin' asses off, you know, save to buy homes. It's very similar to the kind of pioneers we get over, you know, I feel a kinship with them. Yep. And it takes a lot of bravery to come in these. I see these generations now; they're doing great.
Yeah, I thought when I was working at Manitoba Provincial Exhibition for that half year, that was one of the things that I recognized right away is how many different cultures are there, and that's why we created that soccer tournament at the summer fair because what's the one thing most of those cultures have in common? Soccer,
absolutely.
Yeah, so we had international soccer tournament, and I think we had like 14 teams over the weekend. Man. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, Brandon's exceptional in that way, and I think an exceptional example is, you know, you read about in the news how it's such a big deal, and frankly, at this point here, I mean, they have very distinct issues at the border, obviously, Texas and Arizona, that's a whole different situation, but I've seen the positive results of it. We went and talked about ag in the classroom a number of times, and I've been in the classroom and they say, hey, you know, there's 26 different languages in the school.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. So why is it that you're passionate? So your first love.
Sorry.
I know you got a bit of a cold, and I appreciate you coming on regardless here. A man's man. I'm doing that damn podcast no matter what happened to my horse.
We hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. Please take the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca. where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm. And now, back to the show.
So what is it about the livestock business that really, you know, makes you wild about it? Or why is it your passion?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, like, I'm the third generation in it. So I actually still have a little bit of genetics that were my grandfather's in the herd.
Oh, wow.
Also have... I've grown up in the whole livestock industry, so when it comes to genetics of the Hereford breed, I've seen generations of that develop, and I just have an understanding of it that probably most people don't have.
Mm.
And I really like the people too. Like, what a great set of people that there are in the purebred livestock business.
So the breeders would be really close, eh? Like,
they're very close.
Super close community.
Just a week ago, we had the Canadian National Junior Hereford Association National Show in Weyburn, Saskatchewan. And there's 180 kids from around the country, 300 head of cattle, and new friendships are created at those types of events, and those are things that carry on.
Is the ultimate cow in your business, like, evolving? Is that changing, or is it the same?
It always changes, yep.
Yeah.
It doesn't all livestock. Like, as the consumer demands change.
Okay.
So does the type of livestock we
eat. So what are we on to more? Like more marbling, less marbling?
I don't. Marbling is important. We're also looking for cattle that are, I know it sounds strange, but it's true, that are more environmentally friendly. And what I mean is they're more efficient with the feedstuffs that they take.
Yeah.
So
that's very much more environmentally friendly.
It is.
It's a big deal.
It is. Our rate of gain and the the amount of feed they consume to the amount
of your output per your unit of energy in type thing.
Right, is much better.
Yeah, so, what do they call that?
So feed efficiency.
Feed efficiency, what it is.
So the feed efficiency of most of the cattle has improved a lot in the last decade, 15 years.
Yeah.
I can tell you, when my father and grandfather were taking cattle to be fed, like there's lots of cattle that would take 10 pounds of feed to 1 pound of gain.
Yeah.
It was not unusual.
Right.
Now, I would say the average is probably 6 to 1, and there would be some cattle that are as good as 4 to 1, maybe even 3.5 to 1, depending on the stage of life they're in.
You were talking about the market. You were talking about the livestock market and some of the ups and downs. What is happening in the... You had some pretty strong ideas last night anyways.
Yeah, so I think, you know, in Western Canada, we've had 3 very dry years, right? Mm-hmm. And what happens in the cattle business is we use marginal land, right? Mm-hmm. If the land is good enough to actually crop for human consumption, it's going to be crop for human consumption because there's just more margin in that type of business. Mm-hmm. But if you have land that can't be used for that kind of generation of revenue, then you turn it to livestock. Mm-hmm. And what happens is in the last 30 years, we've really taken an approach in the livestock sector where it's the animals don't have the type of attention where a farmer's with them every day, every animal for hours.
Right.
It's here's a herd of 300 head of cattle. We break them up into groups where we have one bull for every 25 cows, and they go in the pasture. We check them multiple times a week, but the less we have to deal with them, better it is, better efficiency use of my time, better efficient use of lots of resources. So I think through that, we've developed cattle that are more efficient in producing the end goal on marginal land.
That's cool.
But what happens is, because of that, when we have no rain and that marginal land doesn't produce, you can't have as many animals on that piece of land.
Yeah.
So then we call it a herd. And what's happened over the last 3 years is there's been massive herd reduction in the breeding herd of the beef industry. Mm-hmm. And at some point, demand, as in all business, demand and supply have to work together. And if supply disappears, then demand for what's left becomes stronger. Therefore, it rises your prices. And I really believe in the next 12 months, we're going to see cattle prices skyrocket because the supply of cows and calves for the feedlots will be diminished in Canada quite a bit. Right? So I think that's what we'll see is, right now the price of a cull cow is at a pretty low spot. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I would hazard a guess that in 12 months it'll be almost double.
And the herd's been culled across Western Canada,
In
your opinion, or factually?
Absolutely,
It seems like there's less mixed farmers doing that. Like you say... Yeah, like having 100 cows and 1,500 acres and going and spending time with it all.
Yeah. And there's
that's how I grew up.
So certainly in Saskatchewan, that's definitely a case where when BSC hit, the province had been 75% grain production, 25% livestock production. That shifted to 85-15 and hasn't recovered yet. Back to 85. And it may not because the technology's changed for grain growing, right? Grains and oil seeds. Varieties are different. Our technology is different. It means there's better margins in actually growing a grain crop than there is livestock. We're able to take some of that land that used to be marginal land and now actually grow a crop out of it.
That's true. I never thought of that.
That's profitable now.
Yeah.
And no one likes doing stuff to break even. That's not our mentality anymore. It used to be my dad, my grandfather's.
That's true.
Right? We're doing this for a lifestyle. We're doing it as a way of life. Now we're doing it to be profitable. And if I can't be profitable on that piece of land, I'm not going to farm it.
My dad worked off the farm because it was all a break-even proposition, but he might have something to retire on.
Right. Yep.
For 20 years he worked off the farm. No, more than that, 25 years. regenerative organic, I don't know what I call them, but 20,000 acre producer doing a great job down in southern Saskatchewan, and he absolutely believes that livestock is a critical part of the whole system that he's building for regenerative ag. So is there a possibility that that would actually be a trend that would bring back more of a 70-30?
It could be. I think you're right when it comes to livestock helping regenerate land.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But is there enough livestock to do ideally what people would want them
like the intensive grazing?
Yeah.
Like you've read the Gay Brown?
Yeah. I don't know if there's enough to do that in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. You know, the other provinces are still basically 50-50, right?
So yeah.
Maybe there's better. But again, you know, you're asking somebody to take land and make it less profitable if you turn it into livestock. If it's capable of growing a good crop for human consumption. So all my equipment is used. Yeah, so I have all used equipment.
Even though you're kind of a big deal in the ag motion.
I don't have enough cows. So. See, there's the other thing. Like, we have great technology in the livestock thing, too. Like, we know that if you have a ration that's cut down to a quarter of an inch, the animal will digest that better than if it's an inch.
Oh, interesting.
We know this.
Surface area?
Yep, we know this. But when you pencil it out, for 100 cows, can I afford to buy brand new equipment? If I had 300 cows, I probably can.
Yeah.
I've got enough animals to put that.
You're not scaled.
That capital.
But then you're not at 300. You said you're not maybe getting that, you know, kind of touch that you like, or wouldn't be farming the same way.
Well, if I had 300 cows, I wouldn't be a show manager, right? Like, I wouldn't be a show director for AgriMotion. It would take too much of my time.
Well, I love the story about how you ran out of water this week.
Well, I didn't love that
story. I mean, I don't know. I mean, a good story,
but it's true. So, as I mentioned, we haven't had much rain at all for 3 years. Last year, we weren't too bad at the home farm, but our pasture farms didn't get any. And for the first time in my life, in 15 years, we ran out of water in our one pasture. I mean, the dugout is dry.
Mm.
And, of course, here I'm wanting to get here to the show here at Olds. And Friday, I got a phone call. We're out of water. So we spent all Friday hauling water, just trying to get enough reserves, get through the weekend while I'm here, and then when I get home, we'll deal with the situation.
And you guys are dealing with the show and Woodstock?
Yeah.
And you're involved in that one as well?
Yeah, so Canada's Outdoor Farm Show at Woodstock, Ontario, is owned by Glacier Farm Media.
Yeah.
And celebrated its 25th anniversary last year.
Wow.
And Doug Wagner's the president of that event, and he's been with it right from day one. Hmm. And it has really become the biggest.
Is he even out to AgriMotion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Doug helped started the show. So Doug is the only person in the country who started two large outdoor shows. And to his credit, he brought his staff out, helped us start up the show. And
right. Is that kind of lessening? You guys are kind of flying under your own?
As the company has grown and the shows have grown, we're redistributing some of those resources differently. So still there's staff that comes from Ontario to help out, but certainly not to the extent that they did in year one and year two.
Did you think you'd be here on U5?
No, actually, I thought this was probably where we are now. I thought it would be year 10. So
why did it grow faster?
I'm really happy that it did and pleasantly surprised that it did.
Yeah.
I would say the industry embraced this type of show.
Yeah.
And that's what helped it grow.
It's just momentum, man. Like, I sensed it right away. Right? I sensed it right away. But it seems like a full show now.
Yeah, like the very first year. So we had 11,000 people come that first year. Just over 11,000.
Right, right.
We had 12,000 people, 12,500 people there on day two. So there's a really good perspective on how it's changed, right?
Three times the population, really.
Yep.
How many times bigger is it physically,
though? Almost four times bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's perspective, too.
Yeah. So a lot more exhibitors. We're utilizing the space better. Traffic's different. Traffic flow in. We make changes every year to try to do a better job. But the show keeps growing faster than
we
prepared for.
It's a high quality problem. What is the nuance, or what is the ultimate skill that you bring, like, as a show, besides the hat and the stature and everything, and being able to see in a crowd? Like, what is it that you bring to the show? Like, it's quite an accomplishment. Like, how have you been able to do this and lead the team?
I think my most unique ability, to be honest, is probably that I can look at a situation and assess it and come up with a plan to make it work. So
and cool as a cucumber.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Like, I've never seen you rattled yet. And we've been through a few things together.
I'd say that, you know, when I was hired, it was, do you think we can do this? Well, I said, yes. Yes, we can. And we've never... So my sales manager for Ag Emotion is Dan Kuchma.
Okay, yeah.
And so Dan and I, we have kind of a saying. We never say no. A customer comes to us with a really cool idea.
Yeah.
And it's something we've never done before. We don't get scared and say no. Like, Stars Event's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Stars came and said, we want to have this big concert, 1,200 people outside. Let's do this.
Yeah.
How many other people would have been too scared to try that?
You raised $1 million, man.
Right. Over 2 years, we've raised $1 million. And it was, yes, we can do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll find a way to do it. And it might mean this has to change or that has to change or we might have to do something different. But
we all, I've had three of them. We're going to do some really wild stuff at Farm Forum. It's going to be super next level. I'm
excited about that.
That's got to get on that, but I think the market, you know, the marketing company kind of looked at me and said, you know, this is like the biggest thing so far. And I'm like, I hope so.
Yep.
Because if it ain't getting bigger, I don't know. It don't really feel right, does it? I mean, sometimes there's a good time to level out a bit.
Yeah. There's a point where you need to take a pause, I'm sure, but we haven't done that yet, have we?
No, and I'm not that interested in it. And it's interesting, too, because you and I were talking last night about, you know, I've kind of recently come upon a new vision that maybe we want to expand an event that we've been working on for years, sometimes twice a year, the Trusted Applicator Summit, and make it, you know, Progressive Agricultural Summit or something of that nature and bring in more people. But you suggested we should bring it into Farm Forum, and you're thinking the Farm Forum is going to go to 1,200 long term, which would be double, I guess, the size of. Was it
590 last year?
It was, eh?
Yeah. So.
See, and there again, the venue didn't really match, like, as far as the size of the show. It wasn't bad, but it doesn't really fill that Calgary Hall.
I know, that Calgary Convention Center is a gorgeous facility. I love it. And I thought the staff were awesome. I just think it's not made for this type of an event.
Yeah.
I think Saskatoon is. I think TCU Absolutely. Place is. And that's where this show got its roots, right?
Yeah. It
grew into that space. And I think we can do it again. Once we get over that 1,200, then we would have to talk about...
It would be the 1,200 mark. You'd be looking at new venues.
I think we'd have to, right?
Would it lose something, though, if you go bigger, you know, at some point? And, I mean, I see a lot of these shows, like even I think Ag Smart Olds here is like 300 and done. I don't know if that's a bad idea, you know, cutting it off, or the Precision Ag conferences by, you know, farms.com and stuff.
I don't know.
But you're not really thinking that way, do you?
No, I think you have to have the venue fit the event, right? Like, if you have a CFL football game at McMahon Stadium, it feels really good. Mm-hmm. You have a CFL football game at Florida Gator Bowl, you're going to look really bad. Right, 100,000 seats versus 30,000 seats.
Where did you have anybody mentor you, learn anything from anybody, or go? You've gone maybe gone to shows. You encouraged me to go to Agritechnica when we were doing the first Growing the Future. Did you learn this just by doing, or
I think a lot of observation.
Yeah.
I especially when I started, I read a lot of articles, went to a lot of shows.
Yeah.
I think again, like I mentioned earlier, I read situations pretty good, and I think I can adapt and change to make the situation work. So if I see something at an event that we're currently not doing, I can probably find a way, if I like it, to bring it into one of our events to make it work. If I see something that we're not doing well, I can call upon some of the observations I've had of other shows to adjust the show to make it work. And the other thing to remind ourselves when we're putting on a show is, you know, we just have to make sure the customer feels good about what their experience is.
Yeah.
We might have to juggle some stuff around in the back.
Right.
But if the customer doesn't see that we're doing that and they feel like everything's smooth,
right,
they have a good experience, whether it's the attendee or the exhibitor, that's our goal.
They might not even know.
They might not know.
Because we all see it all looks really good.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that happened this year. We had a specific request for a specific beer at an event at Ag Emotion.
Okay.
So as you know, like, we have our main bars, which all carry the same brand. But we had some
offshoot groups that do events in their booths at the show. And this one group wanted to use a specific brand because they use the malt barley that they sell.
Nice.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll go do this. We'll do this. So there's two brands that use their malt barley. And we brought in one of the brands. But the person on the floor thought we were supposed to be looking for the other brand.
Uh-oh.
So my event coordinator's running around looking for this brand we didn't buy. We bought the other brand and totally missed the other brand. So the company never knew it happened, but we ended up using the other brand thinking that it was the wrong one.
I was going to ask you about things that go wrong behind the scenes.
Yeah. So that's just an example of, you know, not everything works at 100%, but as long as the customer still feels good and his customer feels good, mission accomplished.
And you brought in a huge component of stuff to these summer trade shows that maybe didn't exist before. I mean, the timing helps, I think, for the show. But the education and the demos, I think, have been a big component that people like. Eh?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the hands-on with the plants. And
that's why we want to come to a show, is to learn. That's the first thing. You know, we do deals and all that stuff, but you can do a deal over the phone. You can go to the retail outlet. You can go to the store, and you can make a deal.
Yeah.
But you come to the event to see what everybody's got that's new, and you want to learn.
Yeah.
Learn about that. So that's why we do what we do. And then we let the rest of it fall into place.
And Glacier's been a really good platform for you to build the vision on, eh?
Yeah, I really lucked out with Glacier because Glacier, their goal is agriculture information.
Like, yeah.
It's their business. And
nobody could tie it together quite the same way, obviously.
I don't think so. We've seen other places try and not start up an event just because they don't have everything.
So if I grow a really big event and stuff like that, they'll just buy that event, I think. Maybe.
I would doubt it.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Thanks for crushing my dreams.
You're welcome.
So what is it? Like, anything big, secretive that you can tell us?
Probably not secretive.
Yeah.
I mean, Farm Forum event. We're going to be launching some things there. We're starting a new magazine that we're going to launch that's tailored towards agronomists.
Yeah.
And that'll be launched at Farm Forum event. There'll be information from the Discovery Farm that we found in all those trials that we'll be launching at Farm Forum event.
A new magazine.
Yep.
Another magazine.
Yep.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think it's, well, just like Ag Emotion, I think there's a spot in the business where agronomists just aren't getting what they need.
Well, it used to be the Advanced Ag Journal by Rob Sake, I think, from the AgriTrend Network, eh?
Well, could have been.
Yeah.
So, no, I think this is really good, and, you know, I think agronomists are very important right now in this business, right?
You know, one of the things on the slide this morning in the keynote was like shrinking knowledge base. And we just had Jerry Stoller pass away. We just had Lorraine Bailey from AgriTrend pass away. I mean, these guys don't last forever, unfortunately. Right. I wish we could immortalize their brains and continue to pick them, you know, through something like AgVisor Pro. Yeah. Doesn't work that way, though. And I don't know, the next generation's coming up, but it doesn't feel like there's the same depth and focus sometimes with some of these guys, like the amount of effort and research they put in, but they'll be different and better in their own ways every generation.
Well, and the thing too, though, is there's always people in every generation who are better than others at doing their job.
The who, not how. We talked about it last night.
So I think we're talking about those few people who've come up over the last 30 years to be the very best, right?
Right.
And now they're gone.
Yeah.
But there's going to be somebody new come up.
Shane Thomas, we're going to talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah.
Excited about that. Man, I love what you do. I think it's been awesome. It's been fun working with you. You know, you've had an impact on the industry. Did you ever think about that?
No, I don't think about that at all. Like, my goal here is just to create a place for agriculture business to be done, because there's more business in agriculture than any other industry, and we don't know that. We don't promote it. The government doesn't understand it. But there's more dollars in agriculture and food production than any other single industry. And I just want to be have a venue or a platform where we're showing that off and we're doing it.
You know you're going to have a legacy, though, right? You're gonna
I don't know. I don't get too worried about that. I really don't.
Yeah.
Just do the job.
You're doing a hell of a job, my man.
Thank you very
much.
It's
a lot of fun working with you. I love it.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
So do you think after this really cool podcast, Glacier will buy it or at least put it on their platform? Do you think there's a good chance?
I bet you that they'll share it.
They might retweet it. Somebody at Glacier Media is going to retweet this. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.